From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
President Bashar al-Assad's delegation joined UN-led peace talks in Geneva Friday. The opposition has offered to share power with the government, but only without President Assad. The negotiations have been overshadowed by an increase in violence and a worsening humanitarian situation. CCTV's Guy Henderson reports from Geneva.
There may still be much that divides the international community over Syria, but aid for civilians isn't one of them. These are the skies over Deir ez-Zor earlier this week. The UN says supplies reached millions of Syrians in March. But no one can control the latest developments on the ground. In Geneva, the opposition says it's willing to join the government in a fight against terrorists if President Bashar al-Assad resigns.
Assad will not be in it. Assad will not be in the future of Syria anymore.
Syrian officials say this is out of the question.
Mr. de Mistura's message is that recent progress on the humanitarian front now threatens to be reversed. Now, structures were put in place back in February to ensure that aid would continue to flow into Syria, even if the cessation of hostilities collapsed. Now, it hasn't fallen apart yet, but clearly humanitarian aid is already struggling to reach some of those civilians who need it most. Guy Henderson, CCTV, Geneva.
Meanwhile, Damascus and other Syrian cities reported a large turnout by voters in Wednesday's parliamentary elections. The election was extended to midnight to accommodate the masses of voters. Telesur's Hazim Abdullah reports from Damascus.
Damascus witnessed, like other Syrian cities, a large turnout by voters in the vote centers. The election was extended until 12 at night, increasing the demand for electoral centers in various provinces. Calls by the opposition parties and Western powers to boycott these elections didn't constitute any impact on the electoral process. Overcrowded polling stations, voters, and large turnout was more like a response, stating that the final decision is up to the Syrian people. This was confirmed by Syrian Foreign Minister.
We constantly say that the Syrian people will decide their own destiny. Today, the Syrian people is proving practically the validity of this statement. The decision is up to the people, and I call on our noble people to intensify this message.
Hazim Abdullah, Dilisur, Syria.
There have been fresh arrests on the third day of the Democracy Spring protest taking place in Washington. This time, police detained activists from the Black Lives Matter movement. RT's Caleb Maupin was in Washington and filed this report.
We're here on Capitol Hill. This is actually the third day of the Democracy Spring protests in Washington, D.C., taking place all throughout the month of April. The ongoing theme is money out of politics, as well as opposing the influence of corporate lobbyists. We're here in the media area, and as you can see behind me over there, you can see the last of the protesters who have been arrested, over 100 arrested. The last of them are gradually being taken away, one by one, by the Capitol Police. About 100 people, at least, refused to get up and refused to stand up, and so because they refused to stand up, they are being arrested one by one by the Capitol Police. Now, as you can see, over in this direction, further over here, there's about 1,000 people who are supporters who came and were part of the protest and then were pushed back by the crowd. So there's about 1,000 people chanting in support of those who are facing ongoing arrests. Now, U.S. President Barack Obama has actually praised the Black Lives Matter movement, saying that it was very organized and really highlighted the issue of police brutality, and Barack Obama has praised it for doing so. But as we see now here at the U.S. Capitol, Black Lives Matter activists are being arrested.
There were also arrests in New York where activists protested a rally by Republican frontrunner Donald Trump. Press TV's Kanish Fatima has more.
Now, U.S. police have arrested several demonstrators protesting against Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump in New York. The protesters gathered around the Grand Hyatt Hotel to denounce Trump's, quote, racist and fascist statements. The rally was joined by the minimum wage campaign group. Earlier, Trump had said that he would not raise the minimum wage and that the wages are too high. A counter rally was held by Trump supporters outside the hotel, where the Republican frontrunner Donald Trump himself was present, awaiting a GOP fundraiser event. This is the latest in a series of demonstrations against Trump over his remarks during the presidential campaign.
Senator Sanders, you've spoken a lot tonight about your votes in Congress. You have been in Congress for over a quarter of the century, and there as an independent, not a Democrat. Now you're seeking the Democratic nomination, but Secretary Clinton has suggested that she's not even sure you are a Democrat. Are you?
Senator Bernie Sanders and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton squared off in Brooklyn on Thursday.
Well, why would I be running for the Democratic nomination to be President of the United States? But here is a good point. You know, in virtually all of the general election matchup polls between Trump and Secretary Clinton and Trump and Bernie Sanders, in almost all of those polls, I do better than Secretary Clinton. Both in the CNN poll, I was 20 points ahead of Trump. I think Secretary Clinton was 12 points. And you know why? Because, in fact, a whole lot of people, this may be a shock to the secretary, but there are a whole lot of independents in this country.
Again, I absolutely agree with the diagnosis. The diagnosis that we've got to do much more to finish the work of getting universal health care coverage, something that I've worked on for 25 years. Before there was something called Obamacare, there was something called Hillary Care, and we're now at 90% of coverage. I'm going to get us to 100%. And with respect to college, I think we have to make college affordable. We are pricing out middle class, working, and poor families. There's no doubt about that. But I do think when you make proposals and you're running for president, you should be held accountable for whether or not the numbers add up.
And on that note, we now go to Professor Anthony Montero from Philadelphia to discuss last night's debate and the presidential campaign.
I think it's now clear, abundantly so, that it is Hillary Clinton versus the people. And Bernie Sanders is just giving expression to the deep anger and distress and dissatisfaction that tens of millions of voters in the Democratic primaries have for the corporate 0.1%. And you know, what was so striking is that Bernie clearly won on most of the points that were thrown out there. And she was obviously attempting to control the damage that had been done to her over the course of this primary season, and to give enough ammunition for the corporate media, especially those in CNN after the debate, give them enough ammunition to be able to spin the whole thing and make it appear that she won. Not only that she did well, but that she won. But I think it's clear now that what we're looking at is a real uprising of the people against the corporate 1%, and I think it's reaching its high point, its crescendo, in the headquarters of the global 1%, that is Wall Street and New York City.
You know, that you have this convergence behind both Sanders and Trump that we've been discussing over, you know, the last few weeks, and a convergence of some issues that Sanders started to spell out. You know, we've been talking about Trump talking about NATO, for example, that it's unwieldy, outlived its usefulness, and all of that. and also the attack basically on the concept of permanent war coming from Trump and saying, okay, well, maybe that carves out space for Sanders, who everybody already thinks is a socialist, to say, let's not go to war with Russia, let's not have permanent war, you know, let's stop all that and fix the country. He really kind of articulated, first of all, he did articulate a critique of NATO and the very different position from Clinton on the funding of it, which is the material part he's got to worry about.
No, I think what we see coming to fruition is that from a distance, there is this dialogue and this influencing by one insurgency movement, let us say the Trump movement, upon the Bernie Sanders insurgency movement, and vice versa. It's kind of a feedback loop. And you're absolutely right. When Bernie Sanders was asked about Trump's position on NATO after dispelling the idea that he had anything in common with Trump,
right,
he repeated the Trump position. And the other side of it is that the intensity of Bernie Sanders' engagement with Hillary Clinton has gone up several notches.
On that, and for example, you saw it on that, for example.
Yeah, I mean, it's confirming what we talked about a few weeks ago, that Bernie would have to get angry, that he would have to assume a posture that literally said, if you steal this, if you continue to cheat as you have been doing, the option of my movement and me in particular, that is Sanders, supporting Hillary in the general election is a questionable matter. Right. And I think at this point, it's not a guarantee that Bernie Sanders and the Bernie Sanders movement will be with Hillary Clinton in the fall, in the November election.
Right. She heard it that way.
Where we are.
Yep, she heard it that way. You can bet that.
That's right. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She heard it that way. And you know, the interesting thing, Don, is that there are many on the left who are tone deaf, who are locked into a kind of preconceived notion of the world and cannot see or hear what is so apparent. Bernie Sanders is not a sheepdog. It may have started out something like that in August or July, but this is not, he is not a sheepdog. He is a legitimate spokesman for a rising movement against austerity, against the war policies, like Trump. His position on Israel is to be, and I put quotes around this, neutral.
Yeah, even-handed.
With respect to, even-handedness. I mean, this is huge, I think.
Yeah. Just saying it. It's, this was verboten language. And the same is this. You had the same with the word socialism. The same with the idea that permanent war is an absurd, ridiculous concept, which Trump articulated by invoking MacArthur and Patton. By the way, that was an interesting little because that resonates with his constituency. They know exactly what he means. And that's who he's speaking to, but I heard it too, and, and you know, and Sanders also articulating some pretty strong positions along those lines. We also have the trade deals, which and a critique basically of crony capitalism, which Trump knows from the inside, and you know, I mean, he's got, you know, hotel approvals in Atlantic City, whatever. You know the game that has to go on to accomplish that stuff. But even if Sanders ends up being the sheepdog, perhaps, at the beginning and the end, right now, what he is saying in front of the people that want to hear it and assembling them so they see each other is this critique that you're talking about, that we're talking about.
Yeah, no. And you know, elections as a limited form of democracy, and it is not the ultimate democracy, it's not the people's democracy, it's not a radical form of democracy.
It's not even the organ. Under the organ of democracy. You know, it's just a tool.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so, you know, we have to argue in good faith. We cannot argue these points, you know, not in a bad faith. Let me say that. You know, the fact of the matter, under the constraints that the people are operating in, we are looking at a major shift, and I won't say fundamental yet, but a major shift in ideological relationships. Mm-hmm. That is, the relationships ideologically between tens of millions of people and the ruling elite of this country. You can no longer, or they can no longer, count upon the masses of people, either in the Republican Party or in the Democratic Party, in particular, the working people,
right,
to go along with their ideological assumptions, that is, the ideological assumptions of the 1%. Right. This is profound.
Yep, and it cuts across all of that. You know, I mean, we have to look at this from a phenomenological point of view, really. There's this massive social, you know, social activity that constitutes a phenomenon of, and I think it's an epic one. We're looking at that configuration forming in the body politic. You're looking at the structures, the existing political structures, electoral political structures, being rattled at the foundations, where people openly speculate about the crash of the Republican Party and perhaps the crash of the Democratic Party in its wake, while these constellations among the people are being formed. I mean, we could end up with an actual workers' party.
Yeah. We will definitely end up with a new kind of movement in this country.
Yeah.
I don't think that people after November are going back into their houses and shutting up. I mean, they know how to use social media. They know how to use podcasting. They know about internet radio, such as what you do. They're not looking to CNN or MSNBC or any of the other, or Fox, to guide them. They have decided that they will have to take matters into their own hands. And I think we're on the cusp of a movement unlike anything we've ever seen in this country, including what we saw in the 1930s. And let me tell you this. The Verizon strike might be the beginning of a new upsurge in the labor movement itself, a new thinking, a new leadership, a new ideological foundation, a new class struggle trade union movement. So all things are up for grabs. The people have decided they must act. They are acting. And that is the message of this primary electoral season.
You know, what's interesting on that point, the last point, particularly with Verizon, and also he expanded it, Sanders, by bringing in GE. You know, he was asked a question that was intended to catch him flat-footed, and the question was essentially, you know, the CEO of Verizon says that you're irresponsible and you don't understand the issues, and by the way, how would you, as someone who is contemptuous of American business, help promote it abroad? And he turned that thing around. He said, first of all, you know, the pejorative term contemptuous is a lot of nonsense. Companies not like Verizon and not like GE, but other companies that do well by the people, I'm totally supportive of. However, and then he started Dyson. He laid out the salary of the CEO, and then he stood with the union, affirmatively stood with them. And that was the only question and only exchange that Clinton stayed completely out of. She didn't have a word to utter about it.
Oh, yes. That was a defining moment.
You got the CWA watching in New York City, for example.
You know,
say that one more time.
You have the Communications Workers of America, for example, in the tens of thousands who all vote, watching very intently.
That's right. That's right. And of course, you know, the Transport Workers Union in New York, 60,000 members, I understand, came out for Bernie. And you know, as to the black misleadership class assuming that they could control the black vote, you know, the Transport Workers Union in New York City is majority black and Latino.
That's right. That's right.
I mean, this is huge. You see, and this, Don, just like we have been discussing over these weeks, this is the way that the working class will find its way to socialism through its own experience in the framework of its own the institutions of its own nation. It's the practices of, and I put quotes, democracy, as broad or as limited as that is. You know, and this is what the left, and especially young people coming into the left, must begin to understand, that no group, no individual, no political party supersedes the masses of people. We have to get, as the left, we have to get on the right side of history, which means on the right side of the working class. And the working class is speaking, and we have to learn how to listen.
And as you mentioned earlier, with new media forms that are being used as a way of communication, inter alia, in the class, one of the responsibilities that we have, for example, with what I'm doing, this is something that I try to be mindful of the whole time, is that people want to communicate with each other and know that they're out there, and you have to get the hell out of the way. You're not the conductor, you know. You're basically the wire, and that's the job that it has to play. And there's a real problem with on the left generally. The Democratic Party DLC types are everywhere. I mean, you saw the fight over Pacifica back in 2000, 2001. That was basically Clinton people that, you know, came in. I mean, Mary Frances Berry, for example, and Pacifica. Pacifica recovered. She was on the board of Pacifica when they fired Amy Goodman, Bernard White, Errol Maitland, all these people, and it was in the aftermath of Amy Goodman, by the way, putting Clinton's feet to the fire on that phone call, Election Day 2000.
Yeah, I didn't know all of this. This is deep, but this is a new day, and people want the truth. People are searching for the truth and are prepared to find it wherever they can. And this, you know, again, this is a crisis of legitimacy, what political scientists call a crisis of legitimacy, where the ruling elite cannot rule in the old way, and the people will not allow themselves to be ruled as they have been. I don't know how else you can put it.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like, you know, a million flowers are blooming. And it's a matter of trying to maintain a garden, basically, and feed it. So the, you know, the thing I'm looking at, well, one of the things that we try to do here is look at the narrative that's, you know, the publicly accepted narrative and the one that's being told in the media here, then go out and look around for what's missing and try to supplement it with that. And for example, if you look at Syria, you have actors there, the Syrian people, the Syrian government, these other groups that are trying to attack it in other nation states, and Russia and the United States. They hear the United States version of that all the time. Okay, so we bring the Syrian ambassador. When he speaks, we play that. When Putin speaks, or the head of the Duma in Russia, or somebody else, commentators from Russia, we present them. So you hear, okay, this is what the Americans are saying, and this is what the Russians are saying. You look at the facts, and you figure out what things are true, what things are not, and then try to go behind it and figure out why. And we have discussions about that, too. You have to do that, or else you don't know what's going on.
That's right. That's right. And you know, the fact that people like yourself connect the domestic to the international, austerity to permanent warfare, repression and imprisonment to war abroad. I mean, this is the work of revolutionaries. And, you know, there's no more revolutionary thing that we can do but to bring information and analysis to the people.
Right. And give them an opportunity to do the same.
Yep. That's right.
Okay, so Tuesday is the New York primary and some others.
Mm-hmm.
A week later is Pennsylvania's, yes? The 26th, the 19th and 26th, respectively.
Yeah.
What's going on the ground in Philly? Do you know, or have you been out?
Well, yes. You know, it's the two sides of, like, two armies positioning themselves for a great battle. On the one side, you have the Clinton forces working through established mechanisms and through established media outlets. And on the other side, almost in an asymmetrical way, you have the Bernie Sanders forces. And let me tell you, and this brings great joy to me, the Sanders forces have established campaign offices and active campaigns in the heart of black working class Philadelphia.
Mm.
I mean, in North Philadelphia, you know, my hometown, my heart, North Philadelphia, and in Southwest Philadelphia, the neighborhoods that have the highest poverty, some of the highest poverty in the nation, where people are working, making $7.50 an hour, and so on, where the $15 an hour movement is strongest. That's where they're establishing their bases. And I think New York is going to force us forward. I think I'm confident that black and Latino voters in New York are going to upset the apple cart and gravy train of the black and Latino misleadership and labor misleadership classes. And when you all do your thing in New York, that's going to inspire us here in Philadelphia. And kind of projecting that here in Philadelphia, Bernie will get 40% of the African-American vote. This will be unbelievably significant. And I think because the convention is going to be held here in July, we the people, and especially we black folk in Philadelphia, who are the majority of the Democratic Party here, by the way, are going to send a message through our votes on April 26th. Bernie Sanders, you're welcome here. And in July, there'll be a welcoming party, a victory party for you in Philadelphia.
Mm. On that note, Professor Montero, thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much, Don, and thank you for all that you do.
And you too. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.